On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Marcus Barahal here. I will recap the Brooklyn Nets' loss to the Utah Jazz. Their two-game winning streak is over. Kyrie Irving has looked great, though, in his return, so that's some positive news. And I'll preview, very quickly, tonight's game against the Philadelphia 76ers. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into a Wednesday evening edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. My name is Marcus Barahal, back on the podcast with you for a quick little recap of last night's loss to the Utah Jazz. The Brooklyn Nets fell in that one 118-107, snapping their brief two-game winning streak and continuing, much to the delight of David Locke, the Jazz's now 10-game winning streak. Just bringing you guys a quick episode here. This will be a solo podcast. Josh and I will be back with another one. It'll probably be up tomorrow morning, about tonight's Nets-Sixers game with the back-to-back. Just wanted to squeeze one in for you guys here. Also, I haven't gotten the chance yet, since he's returned to action, to talk about Kyrie Irving, the star, all-star point guard for the Brooklyn Nets, who is back, came back on Sunday against the Hawks. This was his second game here against Utah, so I will get into that as well in this podcast. But yeah, first let's jump into the game last night. Like I mentioned, the Nets fell to Utah in a game that was very tight at the beginning. Things were looking even. The Nets were hanging tough with arguably the hottest team in the NBA right now, the Utah Jazz, who after this win are now 28-12 on the season, just about at the halfway point. So they're clearly a team that has title aspirations. The Nets hung with them for the most part. It was 45-43, Spencer Dinwiddie at the line for two shots in the second quarter. He missed them both. The Jazz closed the quarter and the half on a 14-2 run to go up 59-45. Never really looked back from there. The Nets made it close for a brief moment in the fourth quarter. They got it to within eight, but Utah quickly pushed it back up to double figures and wound up winning the game, like I mentioned, by 11, snapping the Nets' win streak and kicking off what is an incredibly tough five-game stretch here. That game against Utah was just the beginning because, like I mentioned, they've got Philly tonight, they've got Milwaukee on Saturday, Philly again Monday, then the Lakers on Thursday. So this is probably the toughest five-game stretch of the season. You've got five games against four teams that all have a legitimate shot at winning the NBA title this year. And yeah, this is really going to prove a lot for the Brooklyn Nets going forward. Obviously, this isn't the team that Nets fans are going to be pinning their title hopes on. That's going to come next year and the year after that. But still, you want to see this team show some fight. And honestly, I know Josh isn't one for good losses. I'm usually the more optimistic ones, maybe that's why I'm thinking this way, but this was not the worst loss that the Nets have had this season. I thought Kyrie played really well in his second game back, and the most important stat that he had in my mind was not the 32 points or the 11 assists, it was the 32 minutes that he played. Just seeing him, it seems like he's fully back from that shoulder injury. Before he came back, Josh and I were talking about how it seemed possible that he might not come back at all this season, which was crazy to think about back in November when the injury first happened, but it seemed like a real possibility. And then all of a sudden, like within a couple of days after that podcast, maybe we did a little reverse jinx action, but within a couple of days he was back fully practicing and then made his return on Sunday against the Atlanta Hawks. And in these two games since he's been back, he has shot the ball incredibly well. He was 12-for-19 in this game, only missed one shot in that Hawks game, so his efficiency has been way better than anyone could have expected. He has not missed a beat. He was also 3-of-5 from three in this game, and I mentioned the 11 assists not being the most important stat. That is still a very important stat, just to have some ball creation, or some shot creation rather, some on-ball shot creation that's not coming straight from Spencer Dinwiddie, who did still play 36 minutes in this game. Not the most efficient performance from Spencer. He missed those free throws that I mentioned. He missed a few others in the game. It's frustrating to see him still have such a big load offensively. And obviously, Kyrie took on a ton of what he was doing, but still, you want a little bit more out of Caris LeVert from that second unit. We've seen Caris be a little bit up and down in his return to action. He's had moments where he looks like he's fully back. That first game, his shooting was lights out. He was shooting the ball really well. That hasn't necessarily translated to every game he's played. So I want a little bit more out of him, just so that Dinwiddie can really focus on those spot up opportunities, getting more open looks. And that's something that the Utah Jazz had on their end of the floor. Switching gears a little bit, they had a ton of open shots, and Joe Ingles was a main beneficiary. He tied his career high in this game with 27 points, and he was 6 of 8 from 3. So the Nets have been playing this strategy defensively, which is to have their bigs lay back on the pick and roll. It's a strategy that is not new to Brooklyn. They did it last year with Jared Allen anyway, but it seems like I tend to associate this strategy a lot with DeAndre Jordan and honestly with Rudy Gobert, but he's kind of a master of playing that in-between space to kind of make the guard think that if they launch up a floater, he's long enough to block it, but also hanging back enough where he can get a good contest on an alley-oop pass, and that allows his defenders out on the wing to stay home a lot more. For the Brooklyn Nets, Jared Allen's a good defender. He's a good on-ball defender, especially. DeAndre Jordan, obviously past his prime, still isn't the worst defensive player in the league by any stretch, but they're not in Gobert's class. He's a two-time defensive player of the year for a reason, could be a third in this upcoming NBA awards show if they're still doing that. And yeah, Gobert is just a master at it, and the Nets, when they laid back, that forces guys to pull in, and it led to a ton of wide-open looks for a guy like Joe Ingles out on the wing, who, like I said, he made 6 threes in this one, and he said after the game that it was kind of like taking practice shots. So not the kind of defensive intensity you want to see from the Nets just one game after their best defensive performance of the season against the Atlanta Hawks when they held them below 90 points. So this was a little bit frustrating, a little bit of a step back on the defensive end. Offensively, Utah did a great job of taking away three-pointers. The Nets only had 26 attempts from three, which is, in the mid-2000s, maybe 15 years ago, that would have been a lot. In today's day and age, especially with the way that the Nets have played all season and played last season, that is not a lot at all. They only made 8 of those 26 also, so they didn't even capitalize on the looks that they did have. Kyrie Irving, I mentioned, shot it well, 3 of 5 from deep. No one else really did. Rhodey made the only one he took, but Prince 0 for 4, Joe Harris, rare off night for him, 1 for 5, LeVert 1 for 4, like, no one really had it going from the outside, and how could you when you're not in a rhythm, which is exactly what the Jazz did to the Nets, was they took them out of their rhythm, and they couldn't really get things going without Temple in there as another guy who could create things, or Wilson Chandler, a.k.a. the Cardio King. And actually, speaking of cardio, maybe you want to get fit in 2020. Well, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton. Get that? Pay a ton? For overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in the best shape of your life is with Echelon. Go to echelonfit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high-quality, at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. Peloton? Peyoton? I don't know. I'm just saying. Like I mentioned, go to echelonfit.com/LONBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's echelonfit.com/LONBA. echelonfit.com/LONBA. So I mentioned that the Brooklyn Nets are in the midst of an incredibly tough stretch, and that will continue tonight against the Philadelphia 76ers. Going to give you guys just a quick, just some of my thoughts, I guess, heading into tonight's game. Maybe you're listening to this on your commute home before the game, which is in Philadelphia. The Sixers are 18-2 at home this season, one of the most dominant home teams in the NBA. Those two losses came actually on two consecutive games in mid-December, the 18th and the 20th. So they haven't lost at home in a while, and before those losses, they hadn't lost at home in another while. So they're a very good home team. That being said, they are without Joel Embiid, who is still on the mend with that finger injury. So maybe that's a little bit of vulnerability here for Brooklyn to attack inside. This is the Nets' first trip back to Philly since that playoff elimination last year in Game 5, so maybe trying to get a little bit of revenge also. The Nets need to win one of these next couple games. That's my expert take. I don't know what you guys think. It might be a little bit hot for you guys. That's just my thoughts, you know. This is a key stretch. They do... the schedule gets easier after these couple games, obviously. They've got 7 games that are very winnable after these next 4. They played Detroit twice, the Knicks, the Bulls, the Wizards, the Suns, the Warriors. But even still, you don't want to dig yourself into a hole just so that those games become must-wins. Even though they're against bad teams, they're against teams that will try hard. I was just in LA last week, and I caught the Warriors-Clippers game in person. The Warriors almost won that game, and I know that the Clippers were without Paul George in that one, but even still, they have way more talent than the Warriors, but that's a scrappy team that's going to fight. Phoenix has a guy like Devin Booker who can get hot. Washington plays really hard. The Bulls, Zach LaVine is probably not going to make the All-Star team, but he's at least in the conversation. The Pistons are a mess, and the Knicks are a mess, but still, you know, you can't take any of these games for granted, which is why it's so important to come at things really hard in this Sixer game and in the upcoming games against the Bucks, Philly again, and the Lakers, just because if you can get a win or two on these next 4, then it takes some of the pressure off in that 7-game stretch after, where then if you maybe go 5-2 instead of winning all 7, it's not as big of a deal. So I do think even though the Nets are not favored in these games, they should it would be nice if they could win one or two of them, starting with tonight's game in Philly. The Sixers present some interesting matchup things for Brooklyn. They don't have a traditional point guard, which is actually kind of similar to what the Nets just faced in Utah, just in a different way. The Jazz play Donovan Mitchell kind of as their de facto point guard, but Joe Ingles handles the ball a lot. Bogdanovich handles the ball some, though he's not one for passing. Everyone else in their starting lineup, though, had 4 assists in that Jazz game. And with Philly, you know, they obviously start Ben Simmons at point guard, but they aren't a team that necessarily is going to move the ball in the same way that the Jazz are. So even though it's a team that doesn't have that point guard that I've mentioned in the past can kill the Nets, a guy like Kyle Lowry, a guy like Fred VanVleet, or Markelle Fultz did it in that Magic game a little while ago. They don't have that player. You know, Josh Richardson is maybe the closest to that that they have, but he's not as much of an on-ball guy. This is still a tough matchup for Brooklyn, especially if they're without Chandler and Temple again. Those guys are still questionable as of me recording this, but that really limits the amount of bodies that they can throw at a guy like Ben Simmons. And without Joel Embiid, yes, that is obviously helpful to not have maybe the best center in the NBA out on the court against you. You still have to deal with Al Horford, who I know he's reduced, but he does provide a level of spacing that Embiid attempts to provide, but isn't necessarily as adept at providing, because Horford is, he's probably a better passer than Embiid. He's at least more willing of a passer at this stage of Embiid's career. He's also a better shooter at this stage. So it's just more spaced out for Simmons, so it provides him more of a runway. And I know Nets fans and Jared Dudley fans like myself love to get on Ben Simmons for not having a jumper and for being very passive at times, but Nets fans should remember that the game that Joel Embiid missed in the playoffs last year, Ben Simmons did take control. He did have Jimmy Butler with him, but you could see the aggressiveness from Simmons, and he is capable of playing the type of game where he goes like 9-for-13 from the field, and they're all within 3 feet of the basket, just because certain games he'll have that attacking mentality. So whether it's Torian Prince guarding him, whether it's Rhodey Kurucs, whoever it is, Caris LeVert at times, maybe Joe Harris, the Nets need to stop Ben Simmons first and foremost, because without Joel Embiid, if they can contain Simmons, it'll be tough for Philly, in my opinion, to create shots. So they've got a guy like Tobias Harris, who's also in the running for the All-Star game. He's having a great year shooting the ball. I would much rather have the ball in his hands. I think he's more dangerous off the ball than he is with it. A guy like Al Horford, I mentioned, is a little bit past his prime, so I'm fine letting him kind of do what he wants. And then Josh Richardson can get hot, but I trust a guy like whoever it is, Joe Harris, to chase him around screens and to limit what he can do on that end. I'm honestly more worried about the Nets trying to score the ball, because even without Joel Embiid, this is still a very long Philadelphia 76ers team, in large part because they do start a 6'9" guy at point guard in Ben Simmons. So there's going to be a lot of length on the floor. Josh Richardson, the smallest guy that they typically start, he's still very long as a defender, very active hands. So it's going to be tough for Brooklyn to create things offensively. Hopefully the 76ers game plan is a little bit different than the Jazz game plan, because that one seemed very effective in limiting the Nets' outside shots, because Brooklyn shot 50% from the field in the Jazz game, and yet their offense didn't really seem like it was clicking. They even out-rebounded Utah. It didn't really matter, and that's with Rudy Gobert pulling down 18 rebounds. The Nets still, as a team, had more than the Utah Jazz did. So they out-rebounded them, they shot 50% from the field, and yet they were never really in the game. That's because the Nets, as we know, are not the best free-throw shooting team in the league, and they didn't get the three-point attempts that they usually get. So without the three-ball, it's tough to admit, but the Nets don't have a ton of other options offensively. Besides, if the three-ball's not falling, like, it's basically just Kyrie having to create everything, or Dinwiddie occasionally attacking and finishing at the rim through contact. Which those things are effective and they can work, but if Kyrie's having an off game, which he wasn't in the Jazz game and they still lost, or if Dinwiddie's having an off game, which he kind of was in that Jazz game, it makes it very tough for Brooklyn to create shots, and things kind of revert to how they were when it was just Dinwiddie out there. And he did bring it every night, but there was kind of no one else to pick up the slack. So if both of those guys aren't clicking, and the Nets... If just one of those guys isn't clicking and the Nets aren't able to hit their threes, it's going to be tough for them to win most nights. So ideally they get that three ball, at least just get the attempts up, honestly. Like, I trust a guy like Joe Harris to make enough of his shots if you give him enough attempts. Torian Prince, as frustrating as his shot is sometimes, he's not going to go 0-for-4 every night. Caris LeVert probably shouldn't be taking a ton of threes, but, you know, he's proven that he can... Josh would be so mad if I was saying this. He's proven that he can knock down a couple threes once in a while, so maybe he gets hot. I don't know. Regardless, I do think just getting the attempts up is going to be a good starting point for Brooklyn, because then that also allows for more long rebounds, maybe more fluky tip-outs, that kind of thing that Tyson Chandler popularized with the Knicks. Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan can certainly do that on the offensive glass, and yeah, so I'm looking for a bounce back performance for the Nets in this 76er game. Philly, I think, is going to be coming in with a lot of confidence, even though they haven't played super well on their recent road trip. Just being on their home floor, I'm assuming, will give them a little boost. Hopefully the Nets are not shaken by that. They know how tough it is to play in Philly, having gone through that playoff series, so hopefully they bring it. Hopefully Kyrie Irving keeps shooting the lights out and Spencer Dinwiddie can knock down some free throws. That'll be nice. Josh and I will be back once again probably tomorrow morning with a recap of that game and just like a general news roundup, a little catch-up for the two of us. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. You can follow Josh at JMBass_. I am at Marcus Barahal. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. And until next time, be well. Bye.